You're listening to Live from Lord North Street, a podcast from the Institute of Economic Affairs. I'm Kate Andrews, news editor at the IEA. Today I'm talking to the IEA's head of education, Dr. Steve Davies, on automation, robots, and the future of work. Coming up, Steve dives into the ongoing debate amongst economists and intellectuals about the future of artificial intelligence and its impact on jobs and the economy. Steve paints a picture of a very different world to the one that we live in now, but he ends on an optimistic note, talking about how much happier and healthier we all might be. If you like what you hear, be sure to check out our website, iea.org.uk, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, username IEA London. Steve, are robots going to make us all redundant?
Well, that's a question which is very much in the news at the moment, and it's a question where there's actually a very wide range of disagreement amongst people who've looked at this question. The reason why it's being asked is that in the last 9 to 10 years, we've had a whole succession of major technological breakthroughs which have made possible not just the mechanisation, but the complete automation of a lot of productive processes. And that means, obviously, the replacement of human beings by either robots or machines, or more commonly and increasingly, algorithms of one kind or another, automatic computer processes. In this context, the key breakthrough, the one which is genuinely quite novel in my view, is the advent of artificial intelligence. That's a bit different to mechanisation because a truly functioning artificial intelligence can actually do a whole lot of the things that we tend to think of as distinctively or peculiarly human, such as carrying out very complicated tasks, learning from experience and the like. And in this context, the really crucial breakthrough for my mind was the development by a Google-owned British company originally called DeepMind of an artificial intelligence package that was able to defeat the world's best Go player twice. This took place last year, an enormously important event. So because of these technological innovations, there's a great deal of concern that an enormous number of jobs are going to vanish, that a whole lot of human tasks and functions are going to be in the future carried out by artificially intelligent algorithms or by actual mechanical robots of one kind or another. However, the economists and the other observers who've looked at this are deeply divided about this. One reason is that we've been here before. We've had a whole succession of panics about automation since really as far back as the 1820s. I'm old enough to remember when there was a big one in the 1960s, for example, and there was another one in the 1930s, and there were other ones in the past, as I say, going right back as far as the very early part of the 19th century and the early phase of the Industrial Revolution. And our experience has always been that, in fact, when you have one of these episodes of technological innovation, lots of jobs disappear, but actually even more jobs are created, just different jobs. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't problems, because there's the problem of how you move people from the old forms of employment to the new forms, and that's often difficult, but there isn't a problem of work or jobs disappearing. Now, of course, this may just be the latest example of that kind of automation panic, but you've got to be very, very careful about this. Just because something has always worked one way in the past does not give you any logical reason to suppose that it's going to work that way again in the future. It could well be that this time it really is different. And the advent of artificial intelligence in particular could well be something genuinely and truly novel. Now, even if you assume that, however, there's still room for disagreement. So quite a number of studies have been done which indicate that anything between 40 and 65% of all currently existing jobs are at high risk of automation. High risk of automation being defined as being a greater than 80% probability that the job will no longer be done by human beings within a given time frame, typically 10 to 15 years. On the other hand, the OECD estimates that the likely percentage of total existing jobs at high risk is as low as maybe 9 or 10%. So there's a considerable room for disagreement about exactly how many jobs and what range of jobs are at high risk. And the reason for the disagreement is that the OECD thinks that person-to-person contact and the kind of things that involve face-to-face relations with another human being are very unlikely to be automated, whereas other people think that this is almost certainly not the case for a whole range of largely routine kinds of jobs.
I've heard a lot of people discuss how they're very excited for something like a driverless car to come in.
Yeah.
But if you start talking about automated planes, people become much more uncomfortable. And that speaks to your point about not just face-to-face contact, but how people feel that human connection can matter in certain circumstances, where in others it doesn't. Most parts of a plane now are automated, but people feel like they need that human connection up in that tin can with them in the sky, whereas if they're on the ground, they feel more comfortable.
Yes, that's exactly right. In other words, it could well be the case that in many sectors, it will become technologically feasible to replace human beings, but it won't actually happen because of emotional and maybe irrational, but nonetheless real and powerful resistance to the idea. People actually should be very, very thankful if they're in a pilotless plane, given that the overwhelming majority, well over 90% of all fatal air accidents are caused by pilot error. So you're actually better off with an artificial intelligence flying the plane in most cases. But as you rightly say, a lot of people don't feel that way. With driverless cars, on the other hand, I think the argument from convenience is going to be so powerful that a lot of people will be perfectly happy to use a driverless car. And in that particular case, there's what you might call a tipping point effect, whereby once the number of vehicles on the road that are driverless goes above a certain critical level, they will typically tend to sweep away all the rest for various reasons to do with things like safety regulations, insurance premium and the like. Now, the interesting question, though, is what kind of jobs, and this is what relates to the division between the OECD on the one hand and other consultancies on the other, what is the sort of crucial kind of job that might become removed in one case but not in the other? Well, one example would be, for instance, consulting the doctor. According to the more pessimistic views, most of the kind of work done by GPs and routine physicians at the moment is very likely to be done by online algorithms in the future. The question therefore becomes, how much do you value the actual human contact with a doctor? And I think in many cases, actually, it's not clear that people do actually value it that much. People might say, oh, I really value actually having a chat to the cashier when I go into the bank to take money out of my account. But how many people actually did persist in doing that once ATMs became available? Similarly, I think the sheer convenience and also greater accuracy and availability of algorithms means that people would rather use them than doctors in many cases. I think the same is also true of, for example, lawyers, where a large part of the work that lawyers do is a very, very ripe candidate for automation because it is predictable, it's standardized, it is not therefore require human creativity or judgment, and therefore, again, it's very likely that you'll simply have an algorithm doing the job for you in the great majority of cases.
It sounds like you're not on the side of the OECD. Sure, some jobs might be protected, like in the creative industry, but from what I'm hearing, you think that jobs like doctors and lawyers that many others think will be protected actually won't be when it comes to automation.
Yes, that's very much my view. I think that there are a lot of human contact jobs which the OECD assume are safe, which I think are not. And the reason is because of the way in which artificial intelligence makes it possible to automate and carry out all kinds of jobs that we previously have not thought. The interesting thing is that the bulk of the kind of jobs we're talking about here are middle class white-collar jobs. So the bulk of the impact of this latest technological revolution is going to be felt by people in white-collar office sectors rather than people engaged in manual work. Interestingly, the kind of jobs that are not at high risk of automation are of two kinds. One, as you indicate, is jobs that involve a high level of creativity or human judgment. So, for example, while the bulk of routine legal work may be done by machines in the future, it's almost certain that pleading in court, the work done by barristers or trial lawyers, will not be automated. Very hard to imagine a robot that can successfully take on that kind of role. Some people argue that a lot of nursing will be automated, but again, I'm rather doubtful about that. I think that requires qualities of very fine judgment, which are impossible to put into even quite a sophisticated algorithm. But interestingly, the other kind of work that is very likely not to be automated is manual work, because one of the things that has actually proved to be incredibly difficult to automate at both a mechanical and an AI level is work involving the human hand. the human hand and the coordination of the human hand and its motions and actions with intelligence and with perception has proved to be unbelievably difficult to replicate. And so actually, skilled tradesmen or craftsmen are also very, very safe. And so all kinds of jobs, including actually some relatively unskilled manual jobs, are much safer than many of the more white-collar professional jobs. And this is going to lead to some quite interesting developments in the future. It may well be, in fact, that we do indeed have an automation panic, and we do indeed have lots and lots of new kinds of jobs created, but that the new kinds of jobs created will in many cases actually be what you might call highly specialist craft-end jobs, which would actually fit in with other economic developments, such as the move towards greater and greater product differentiation and market segmentation and the like.
We can't separate the technological revolution from the political revolutions that we're already starting to see. Donald Trump won the presidency over in the United States by bringing together people who really felt like their jobs were at risk. Now, Donald Trump said that that was because of immigration, and that's why he wanted to build a wall along the Mexican border. He wanted to stop other people from taking their jobs, but a lot of economists noted, actually, many of the jobs being lost were not lost to immigration, but lost to automation. How do we deal with this from a cultural and political perspective?
It's very, very difficult. There is undoubtedly the fact that a lot of people do not welcome change, even if from the economist's point of view they're ultimately better off. In addition, of course, in many cases they personally are not better off, even though society as a whole may be in a better condition. And so this does raise all kinds of tensions. It does raise the danger of quite dangerous political movements arising, or of a backlash against some kind of scapegoat group who are blamed for things that are actually caused by the onward march of technology or economic change rather than anything else. It's a challenge for public policy, essentially, to find about ways of mitigating the impact of change. And one of the ways of doing that, obviously, is to give people not a particular skill set, but an adaptable or flexible skill set. In other words, rather than training people in specialist skills, what you want to do is to give people certain basic capacities or abilities, above all the ability to learn new skills quickly, or problem-solving capacity and things of that sort. And that probably requires quite dramatic and radical change in our educational system.
Not to be too pessimistic, but it seems like our education system at the moment is so far from training people in that kind of way. And if this paradigm shift happens in the near future, what does that mean for people who have been trained in a totally different way?
It's going to be very difficult, I'm afraid. This is always the problem with rapid social and economic change. The problem we have in many ways is that we have an education system that even now is still one that's designed essentially to produce workers for mass production in large factories, the Fordist system, as some people call it. And we're now already in a completely different kind of world. And that sort of very standardized education system designed to produce very large numbers of people with a very specific kind of skill set is just no longer appropriate. It's worth saying, however, that there's another reason why many economists are relaxed about this, quite apart from the thought that this may just be yet another panic. The position is this: let us suppose we do come to a world where there's lots and lots of stuff being produced on an automated basis, lots of services being provided on an automated basis, and very few people have to work. From the economist's point of view, this is not a problem, because to an economist, jobs, paid work, is a cost. What you want is not the job, you want the product. And you want the product at as low a cost as possible. And the fact that you have to pay some people to produce the product is actually a cost rather than a benefit. That's why if people say, oh, a car factory is opened and it's going to create so many thousand jobs, you should shout at them, really, or remonstrate with them, because that's not the point of the factory. The point of the factory is to produce cars. So if you live in a world in which there are lots and lots of products around, but nobody has to work to get them, that's actually wonderful from the economist's point of view.
Well, this raises a very interesting philosophical question about not just the point of work from a production standpoint, but what does work mean to an individual? Is having a job the end goal, or is having the ability to purchase, to have a good standard of living, to be able to live in the world as an autonomous human being, is that the end goal?
Well, maybe. I think actually what people do find very valuable and self-defining, or something that makes them feel better about themselves and the world is doing work in the broad sense, not necessarily paid work, which they see as being productive and valuable in some sense. The reason why employment is often seen in that light is because the pay that you get for doing the work is seen as validating it in some way. But there's no necessary reason why that should be. I think it is very important for people to do things that they perceive to be worthwhile and important and that they see as adding value to the world, but that doesn't necessarily have to be paid work.
What is the benefit going to be to the average worker who may be looking at redundancy if this paradigm shift were to occur?
Well, to answer that question, first of all, they will have access to a very wide range of products and services which will cost very, very little, and which in fact may even be given away for free. Because one of the things that automation will do is to reduce the marginal cost of producing all kinds of products pretty close to zero. So you're going to be living in a world of free or almost free stuff, which means that having a large income is not going to be as important as it maybe is at the moment. Secondly, if you are living in a world, for example, where you don't have to do paid employment, you are going to be much more in charge of your life. You will be able to actually spend a lot of time doing what it is that you really want to do. And I think it's fair to say that most people do not work because they want to do the specific job they're doing. They work so that they can spend time doing other things that they think are really important, such as their family or a hobby, very often of one kind or another. And if you're living in a world where you no longer have the necessity for paid employment to live, then you will be able to spend much more time being creative, doing what you find really interesting, and controlling and directing your own life.
Sounds like a radically different world to the one that we live in now. Steve, if you had to pick one film or novel or podcast or something that depicted the future, what do you think is the most accurate one so far?
I think some of the work of Peter F. Hamilton, for example, has some interesting speculations about how things might work out in the future. It's not a utopian world at all. He has all kinds of rather dark things going on in his futures, but they're still very interesting in that regard. Science fiction is actually the place to go. I think the science fiction writers have done a lot more serious thinking about what a world like this might be like than the economists have done until recently.
Well, as long as it doesn't look like Alien, I'll be fairly happy. Thanks so much, Steve.
You've been listening to the Institute of Economic Affairs, Kate Andrews and Steve Davies. For more from the IEA, visit our website, iea.org.uk, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, username IEA London.